This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
It is the spirit of Houdini we wish to contact. Houdini, are you here? Are you here, Houdini? Please manifest yourself in any way possible.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This is a very special Houdini episode here aired on October 31st, 2019. And we'll begin by actually letting you hear a rare recording of Houdini's voice that was recorded in Flatbush, New York in 1914, which is 105 years ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, in introducing the Magic Word Podcast, although there is nothing supernatural about it, I am willing to forfeit the sum of $1,000 to anyone who can prove
that the voice of the host of the Magic Word Podcast is not the real Scott Wells, or
it is possible
to prove that many of his guests are not among the most interesting and entertaining people in the world of magic today. And there is a misstatement or inaccuracy said by Scott Wells or one of the guests on the podcast.
One of my assistants
or one of his listeners or friends of the Magic Word who provides financial support for this podcast will immediately contact Scott Wells by leaving a comment on the episode blog or by email to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com.
Okay, now back to much clearer sound. Are you glad that we are not having to live in that age back whenever that we had those kinds of scratchy radios and record players and that kind of a thing? And today we have much higher quality sound of audio, which you can hear right here on themagicwordpodcast.com. Thanks to all of our friends, The Magic Word, who are financial supporters that make this possible from week after week. And if you want to join them, then please go over to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you'll find a link where you can learn more about how that you can support us and some of the cool perks you'll get along the way then too. So thank you guys again very much. Just a very quick pitch there, because right now we are here in the Halloween season. Actually, this is Halloween Day that this is going out to all of you. This also marks the conclusion of National Magic Week, which was something supported by the Society of American Magicians and goes for a full week leading up to October 31st. And then today through, I believe it's November 2nd, actually begins the Day of the Dead. So that's another celebration going forward for another couple of days. But today, back in 1926, was when Harry Houdini had given his last performance and gave up the ghost, so to speak. And in many ways, he was trying to come back as a ghost, I guess, or at least as a spirit. He was famous in his final years for giving a lot of lectures, presentations on debunking spiritualism in the context of his shows. I believe that it was like the third act of his show that he would do this, and then finally just kind of went on the road and trying to debunk these kinds of spiritualists who were scamming people, taking people for their money. When you stop to think about it, it was shortly after World War I, when a lot of soldiers had not returned who had died in the war, and their widows were trying to find some way of trying to talk with their loved ones, and they were willing to pay anybody for any amount of money in order to hear their voice at least one more time and to talk with them. And so they had, he was trying to debunk, again, a lot of these spiritualists who were scamming people out of their lifetime wages in some cases. Anyhow, kind of getting off on another tangent over there then as well. But one of the things that has been done for a long number of years since, 1927, 29, somewhere late, shortly thereafter his death, that they were trying to talk with Harry, and there were some official seances that were done for a while and then picked up again. Sid Radner started doing it, and then later his son Bill started picking it up, and it continues on to this day. And there are seances, again, going on around the world, but the one which is called the Official Houdini Seance is one that will be given this year at Niagara Falls at the Rapids Theater. That'll again be tonight. Don't have any of the details. Usually that there are a few people who attend this, like Tom Bolt and Bill Radner and a few others hosted. Those are the two hosts, by the way, of this. And there are a limited number of tickets available for people who want to see the seance or to attend and to be a part of it. Some years ago, back in 2012, Arthur Moses, who is a well-known collector of Houdini memorabilia, had made a had invited this official group to come to see his collection and also to hold a seance there. And it was a wonderful time. We had John Cox, who gave a talk and gave a little presentation about the Grimm game, and at that time showed some footage of part of the film that before then had not been seen. It was just some lost film footage. We also had Jamie Salinas, who had done a straitjacket escape, and we had some other people who were performing then as well. And then the second half, we actually did the seance, and I was the medium or the person who was trying to bring Houdini back in this context of our seance that we had around the table. But there were quite a few people, I want to say well over 100 people in attendance at this event. And there was also a video that was taken, and they had edited it down to a 30-minute video, and that's available. If you want to get a copy of that, you can certainly order it directly from Arthur Moses, and I know that he'd be glad to send you a copy. And he said that he doesn't have really a website where that you can order this. Just write him directly, and I think it's just $15-16, something like that, for this video. And you can send it to him at AEM. It's Arthur E. Moses, AEM 1957. So it's AEM 1957 at sbcglobal.net. That's AEM 1957 at sbcglobal.net. And just ask him about some information on that DVD, and I'm sure you won't be disappointed. It was a lot of fun. Even that evening was fantastic, and there was something that actually had happened. I'll leave it at that. Just to say that was back in Halloween in 2012 that we had conducted that. Well, last week we spoke with Joe Posnansky, who is the author of a new book on the life and afterlife of Harry Houdini. And this week we're going to be talking with Roger Dreyer. And as a reminder, I want you to go to the magicwordpodcast.com, where last week we offered this contest for three free books from the publisher of the life and afterlife of Harry Houdini. Also, there are three free books that are offered by the publisher of The Show Won't Go On. So if you'll go back to last week's podcast episode, go to that blog on themagicwordpodcast.com. That's episode 527, and scroll towards the bottom, and you can enter one or both contests. I will say that if you do happen to win, if your name is randomly drawn for both, and you're a really lucky person, then we'll let you know, and you can make a choice of one or the other, but you unfortunately are not going to win both. I think just to make it fair for all the rest of the entrants, that we'll try to, we're going to have six different winners for these six books. So be sure to go back in there, and the winners' names will be drawn next week and announced when we have next week's episode. Now a little background on this week's episode. When I was in New York City to see the Darren Brown show a few weeks ago, I stopped by the headquarters of Fantasma and there got to talk with Roger Dreyer, and he led me on a guided tour of his museum and of the headquarters there. So I would suggest if you would complement this audio you're hearing now with some of the pictures that I had taken. So if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com to this week's episode, number 528, that you will see a series of photos that I had taken, and you can kind of go through in the slideshow and kind of see exactly what we're talking about as he is pointing out some of these items in this audio tour you're going to be hearing now. So I would like to introduce my friend and yours. You probably have seen him at some magic conventions as a dealer for Fantasma Magic, and also well-known for the Fantasma Magic sets that are sold worldwide. Please welcome my friend, Mr. Roger Dreyer, here on The Magic Word. All right, Scott Wells here for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm excited that we're in New York City now at the world-famous world headquarters of Fantasma Magic, and also here with the proprietor, Mr. Roger Dreyer. Hi there, Roger.
Hey there, Scott.
And also at the Houdini Museum, and because now we're into October and getting near the... start to say, what would that number be? Is he 26? This would have been about, what, the 73rd anniversary of his death, I guess, approximately.
I'm sorry, Scott. You're here to interview, not for me to give you math lessons. So yeah. Let your listeners and you figure that out. But what I can tell you is what differentiates the Houdini Museum from any other collection of Houdini is that we have here one of a kind of the rarest artifacts. May it be Houdini's gravesite bust, the actual second bust that was put on display after the first one was destroyed. We have Houdini's performance table, which has beautiful, beautiful devils carved into the legs of the table.
Wow.
We have a lot of ephemera from Jacob Heyman, the brothers Houdini, Houdini's first partner.
And that's what we were just about to talk about. Yeah, there was some controversy about that because they agreed to be the brothers Houdini, and then whenever they split up and then he started working with Hardeen, his brother, they were the brothers Houdini, and he didn't like Hyman going by the same moniker,
correct,
basically.
And but later on down the line, the brothers Houdini actually became the Hebrew comedians. So
you were talking about
Hyman.
Okay.
So Hyman. So they are the ones that were also known as the Hebrew comedians. They formed a comedy act after performing magic. We also have a very rare Welsh Brothers letter of recommendation that you might have seen inside Doug Henning's book. It talks about the metamorphosis trunk. We're very privileged that in addition to people like our friend David Copperfield that has a metamorphosis trunk, Fantasma, the Houdini Museum, also has another original metamorphosis trunk that's a real loader. But the letter from the Welsh Brothers letter of recommendation dated 1890...
You know what this is here?
8. Is pretty amazing, but what we found out is this letter of recommendation was actually written by Houdini himself. So nothing like Houdini being the king of marketing, where he actually goes ahead and writes his own letter of
recommendation.
So who's to dispute yourself when you say you're the greatest performer in the world? We also have, quote unquote, a lot of naked pictures of Houdini.
I was going to say he was famous for that later in life.
And here he is in 1899, just with a loincloth.
Yeah.
And that's the same publicity photo that he used in his ephemera and brochures to promote his act. It's amazing how Houdini back then was able to capitalize on his phenomenal physique and body.
Yeah, because back then it seemed like that they were like still Victorian era in which the women were covering up down to their ankles and the bathing, you know, on the beach. And here he is, you know, just in chains only.
We also have a lot of very unique picks and gimmicks. Some of the picks that we have, a little unknown fact, is some of these picks actually have a piece of thread that you can actually still see the DNA somewhere on that thread. So what would happen is when Houdini would go inside a cabinet and try to pick the lock or the handcuff, if he should drop it in a dark confinement, he would be able to just find the string and pull it right up back to his hands. So time is of the essence when your life is sometimes on danger.
Was that attached to his body?
Actually, some people say he would put the thread inside his mouth.
Okay.
And then go ahead and try to open it up. Mm-hmm. And even little small pieces of clay that Houdini made key impressions from. We have a wide variety of escape restraints that were obtained for some of from Houdini's assistants like Jim Collins and Vickery, and we're very fortunate to even have a bunch of pieces from the Henry Mueller Museum and from Sid Radner. We also have really rare photographs, may it be Houdini's photo of his rabbi. The photo we have supposedly was by Houdini's bedside, that's actually autographed on the back saying, "My beloved Reverend S.M. Weiss."
Who was his rabbi?
In Appleton, Wisconsin, Houdini's father.
Samuel.
Yes, Samuel S.W. Weiss.
Okay.
So then we go to even a really amazing pieces of apparatus. Well, the remnants of the water torture cell to...
remnants. This was what was in Canada?
That's
Niagara
correct.
Falls burned?
And they got $1 million for that water torture cell from insurance money. We also have some of the rarest water torture cell posters. A really interesting piece that we have is a lily handcuff. The lily handcuff actually has a key, and in one of Patrick Culliton's books about Houdini, it makes a reference about Houdini requesting Rodeburg Magic Manufacturing Company to make a key, and Rodeburg wrote back, "Not only do we make the key, but we put the letter H in the design," and we actually have that letter H key on display.
Wow.
We also have Jarrett's mailbag escape gimmick that he actually made for Houdini. It's a bolt that would be used to secure the mailbag that has a reverse thread that would allow Houdini to escape with the ease using that particular method devised by Jarrett. One of my favorite pieces is a reproduction of Q, the robot, the automaton robot from the Master Mystery 15-part serial. We were very fortunate that John Gahn made us a complete reproduction, and we were told that we are the only place in the world that has public display of this particular Q robot. So during Comic-Con, we have guys lined up here, all praying to the guy.
I know this is really what started the... It was the first, essentially, sci-fi movie that featured a robot. And that's why that this particular poster I see we have right here, which I guess is an original, is so valuable, not just to magician collectors, but to sci-fi collectors, because it's the first known poster of a movie, obviously, with sci-fi with a robot.
Absolutely. Some other things we have are some very rare, one-of-a-kind, unpublished photographs of Houdini. One of my favorite is Houdini's visit to San Quentin Jail. And the date of it is... September of 1915. What's brilliant is if Houdini knew he was going to be in a particular town, he would write to the biggest jail yard in that particular area, often a publicity stunt. And here we have photos of Houdini standing on a table in a crowd of hundreds of prisoners. And of all the tricks that Houdini decides to perform, it's the East Indian needle trick. Well, talking about pricking the audience, that's one way of really showing how Houdini was able to command the crowd, project his voice, and be able to really entertain some of the toughest, most notorious criminals in the world.
With something that is so hard to see from that distance, particularly outside, because he doesn't have a spotlight hitting the needles and everything. They just have to believe, when you're in the back of the audience, that it's really happening, I guess. Wow.
And then you would see the glistening effect of the needles coming out of your mouth with the sun hitting it.
I guess that's true, sure.
But Houdini was a master showman. Who would ever expect of it, of all the tricks, for one of the tricks for him to perform for that crowd would be that particular trick.
There'd be so many other things, obviously, with escapes inside of a prison that would be obvious, but...
We also, we received from Jack Channon, the famous magician and magic dealer out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. He was actually the president of the Bess Houdini Magic Club. So when he was the president of the Houdini Magic Club, Bess Houdini would come and always bring the members certain gifts. One of them was the packing box escape gimmick. It is absolutely sensational. It's a metal bar. That's a vice that when you were to twist the middle, it would exert pressure on both ends to open up a packing box. If you only exert one pressure on one end, that would probably cause a crack in the particular wood crate. By having it equal pressure on both sides, that allowed Houdini to not only get out of the packing box, but he would use the end of it to seal it back up. And this is the exact packing box escape gimmick shown in a newspaper article about how Houdini did his tricks in, around the 1930s. We also have some of Houdini's most amazing tools and gimmicks that he used to get out. On the cover of Handcuff Secrets, we you see a photo of Houdini kneeling down about to brace the handcuffs against his knee. We actually have the metal plate that was described inside the book that Houdini would bust on top of his knee, which really was the metal plate, in order to open up the handcuffs. One of the most talked about pieces we have is Houdini's 1907 escape coffin that he utilized against a challenge from the same people that do the Boston Marathon today. That was at 1907, and that publicity stunt was picked up by every major newspaper about how Houdini was able to escape from a particular coffin casket.
It looks like a part of this wood is splintered up there. Is that something that was part of his escape or something, or just whenever it was in shipping or something, it might have been damaged?
No, that's a very good question. That's part of where the nails were, or the screws that would actually lock down the coffin.
Okay.
And we're one of the few people that actually have an actual costume worn by Bess Houdini. It's a beautiful costume with a fur bottom. We have amazing posters, original posters and challenge posters.
She was so tiny. Wasn't she like 4'8" or something like that?
She was definitely under 5 feet. I believe more towards the 4'10", 4'11". But who knew? One of my favorite bits that we have is, as everyone might know, Houdini had three parts of his show. He had magic, he had scapes, and debunking the local spiritualist. We actually have his spiritualistic props that he utilized in order to show people in the audience how the local spiritualists are actually, quote-unquote, bringing back the dead. Now, Scott, check out that metal plum hand. Here you see a metal plum hand, and I say plum lead. That's really what I meant by plum, not plum color, but plum lead. So what would happen is, as people gather around the seance table in order to contact the beyond, the spirits would say, "Everyone, please, we're about to close off the lights. The lights were closed. Everyone hold on to the person's wrist next to you." The spirit medium would take this plum metal hand, wrap it around the spectator or the guest of the seance next to them. You would actually feel the grip, you would feel the tightness of the metal hand wrapped around your hand, thinking that it's the spiritualist's hand on you the entire time.
Sure.
That spiritualist would then have a free hand, go underneath the table and take out, we have a 20-foot extension rod that compacts to less than 12 inches. This actually can grow to 20.
That was this rod right here?
Yes, to 20 feet.
Telescope.
And at the end, and a telescope like an antenna, but a very strong, incredibly made antenna, possibly by Jim Vickery. And at the end of the antenna is a white handkerchief, which would make the sound effects of a ghost. We also have one of Houdini's spirit trumpets. And above this spiritualism display, we have one of the most talked about photos. It's the cabinet photo of the Fox sisters from 1848 that created the whole spiritualistic movement by convincing the neighbors of Hyattsville, New York, that spirits existed in their home. And the secret was, as many of you might have read, they slipped off their shoe and were able to click their toes and make snapping sounds with their toes.
But the spiritualism movement still exists and thrives today.
Yes, and I wonder what Houdini would say to John Edwards. Who knows? He would say, "John, you want a nice $1 million? Or Houdini offered $10,000 back then. And let's see if Mr. Edwards were, who knows if he would be able to beat Houdini. I just don't think so. We also have one of the rarest letters written by Hardin. And what it talks about is the following. "While on this trip, Houdini became a jockey. He rode horses, mules, and anything put before him. He was accidentally shot in the palm of his left hand, and though at the time it seemed a misfortune, it proved to be the turning point of his life, because the bullet that remained in the palm of his hand caused the growth to seem the same as the other hand. Houdini could contract his hand so that he was able to pull it through the smallest kind of hole or handcuffs. This was the secret that he carried to his grave, and not even Bess knew of it." So this is pretty amazing information about supposedly what the bullet in Houdini's hand did that allowed him to get out of certain restraints. Then we also have...
I've heard that, but I didn't realize there was factual evidence to point to him being able to do that. It's interesting.
And the fact that he never told his wife, so Bess thinks that Houdini was struggling a lot more than he might have, that's an interesting point that kind of surprised me that Bess never knew about that.
These are the mirror handcuffs, obviously.
This is a reproduction of a mirror handcuff with supposedly a key that we were told was the second key of the mirror handcuff. We are fortunate that our friend David Copperfield tried out our second key on his actual mirror cuffs that he has, but unfortunately our second key did not work in the mirror cuffs. So all of us are trying to figure out, here's a key almost identical to Mr. Copperfield's mirror cuffs, but it does not fit. Does that mean there is a second pair of mirror cuffs out there? Who knows?
Interesting.
David Copperfield was nice enough to lend to us his Houdini straitjacket that he utilized in the Passions of Fire Emmy Award-winning TV special, where he got out of the most amazing spikes in 1993. We also have David Copperfield's costume that he wore and he acted on Broadway for his Dreams and Nightmares show.
Right, yeah. Joey Spina was in that, I think, yeah.
And where David cut himself in half with a laser beam. We also have other magician's artifacts. May it be David Blaine's boots on display when he's frozen in time. Penn and Teller's goggles and boots that they utilized on their TV specials and in their Vegas show. And, of course, we have behind us the one and only Chung Ling Soo costume, where Chung Ling Soo died trying to catch the bullet in 1918.
That was the costume he was wearing on the night he was shot? Or is that at the Magic Circle?
I'll leave that up to people to make the decision, but no. No, it's just one of many Chung Ling Soo costumes, but it's still brilliant.
It's beautiful.
And it's decoration and embroidery. We also have a lot of the hand-painted props painted by Rick Heath that was utilized in the Le Grand David troupe. And the most important thing is, inside this Houdini Museum, where we don't charge admission, our whole goal is to get kids off the streets into the performing arts. So there's many of Showtime TV special that we worked in order to get kids to build up their self-esteem by utilizing magic as a way. And, of course, when people are done with their little Houdini tour, they come over to our resident magician, RJ, in order to buy some Phantasma magic.
Of course, that's why it's fantastic, and it's here at Phantasma. I don't want to overlook what we've got over here then with the Tony Curtis movie, which started so many magicians on their path.
So we have a one-of-a-kind 1953 Tony Curtis Houdini poster, which no one else has seen. Tony Curtis himself never saw this particular poster, and he was nice enough to draw a floating ball between his hands and then sign the poster for us because he was known to be an artist. We also have from Henry Mueller's estate the handcuffs that belonged to Houdini. These were purchased by Henry Mueller in 1967 from Dunninger. There's some talk about how Dunninger in later years was able to sell some so-called Houdini handcuffs. This is all before that particular era, and this is the actual beautiful 4 feet high handcuff board with about 20 different restraints and locks that came from Houdini's home that Dunninger took when he was younger from Bess Houdini.
It may or may not necessarily have been used by Houdini in some of the shows.
Supposedly, knowing that these came from Houdini's basement, I'm sure Houdini used it in some way or another.
Because I'm seeing this. Is this the same thing we saw over here, these restraints that, what do you call that?
Those are lily iron restraints.
Because it was so narrow, it looked like his hand, or rather his wrists were very narrow. Of course, he was a small man.
What's amazing is the lily restraints on this particular board, we have five different lily restraints, and they are one of the rarest handcuffs of all. So I'll tell you what, Scott, let's leave the Houdini Museum and let's go to my back offices, and if any of your listeners ever ask RJ here at Phantasma, the Houdini Museum, to see the back offices, they're in for another free tour.
Okay, let's head that way. So here we are in the back room.
So, Scott, do you want to try on this dragon costume so you can compete with our friend Piff? Piff was nice enough recently to donate to our Houdini Museum one of his actual costumes that he wore, and we're about to make this as a part of our Houdini display to show kids who are some of the coolest magicians out there.
You know, when I saw this earlier, it was amazing because just not a week ago, I was wondering, how many costumes does he actually have to have? Because he's working every night, he's got to be sweating in that thing. And
and I can tell you, this is one heavy dragon costume. I give Piff a lot of credit. On our walls, you see pictures of people like Neil Patrick Harris, Whoopi Goldberg, Bill Nye the Science Guy, Conan O'Brien, Emeril Lagasse, Dick Cavett, John Travolta, Richard Gere, Neil Diamond, Adrian Brody. These are some of the people that actually have visited our Houdini venue. And then one of our biggest supporters is Shin Lim. It's amazing. When Shin Lim was here about a year ago, he actually gave Phantasma, the Houdini Museum, over 6 million views. We have an episode, Can You Fool Shin Lim? And that was really great for Shin Lim to take the time in order to greet his fans and kids, allowing the kids try to fool him. So then we have a full, check this out, Doug Henning display, the magic show, and different signed posters from Doug.
Oh, cool.
Which is really nice. Now we
I've got two, but not the Merlin. I've got a button, but I don't have the Merlin poster. I've got this framed in my house and also one of the magic show. And it was kind of cool, too, that I was at the Court Theater to see and chat with Darren Brown last weekend, Friday night, and we talked about him sharing the same dressing room that Doug Henning had been in. He thought, this is just really cool. I said, did he sign the wall or anything? And I said, I haven't noticed. I'll look.
Actually, if not, Darren should have just signed Doug Henning and signed his name. That would be pretty good.
Yeah.
But I also saw a Darren show. If you're coming to New York, go see Darren's show and come visit us as well.
That's a twofer. You got to do it.
So cast and crew only. All right, Scott, you're part of our cast. Let's go behind this other door.
Okay. Here we go into the inner sanctum.
Don't worry about it.
Well, hello to you.
That's Connie.
Hi, Connie.
Hi.
So, yes, you're greeted by Connie first off. She kind of...
Security guard, I guess. Yeah, she comes through the door.
Whoa, she has to. All these magicians are always trying to touch everything in the back offices. Here we have an incredible display of Siegfried and Roy items and dating back to their early days. And rumor has it there might be appearing some Siegfried and Roy costume as well on display. We have some really early David Kottkin, Davino the Magician artifacts and different early ephemera, including the Magic Man's...
yeah, when he was in Chicago.
Yep, the window card. Uh-huh. Then we have on the walls all the different early drawings of Mickey Magician from the TV show, from the movie Mickey Magician.
Phantasma?
It was a 1937 Magician Mickey, animation film that Disney created. But we have the original drawings. And then you see on the walls the hundreds of different famous magicians that have been here.
And my buddy Simon Lovell's picture up there, who worked for you.
Ah, yes, the little hamster himself.
little ferret.
You know, we were so lucky to get people like Angelo Carbone working for us for 5 years, guys like David Roth working for us for 5.5, 6 years, guys like Simon Lovell for many, many years, and it's Phantasma got its creativity from really the best of the best, and it shows with our magic sets. Here's here's a couple of fun ego-boosting articles about Phantasma. And we were featured in Time Magazine. We were featured in as CEO of the Week with the New York Times, where I talk about being paid to play as a passion, as a toy guru, and utilizing my passion for magic since a kid. And now for the big surprise, come on, Scott, I'm going to show you an office that I guarantee that you've kind of maybe never seen anything like it.
Okay.
You'll let me know.
Oh, my gosh. Just from the entryway. No, I haven't.
So, Scott, why don't you tell your viewers what you're seeing? I'll let you take over.
Okay, well, in going through this to begin with, it looks like a a clown's office because you're greeted, begin with my Ronald outfit, and then inside, then with a Burger King display of some things, and then it looks like another Ronald McDonald outfit that looked like it was an MC or something. I would have been wearing the Macy's float. And then from the movie with Anthony Hopkins, there's Fats from Magic. That's the original one?
That's one of six of the ventriloquist dummies.
Does David got one also?
I don't think he does. David was just nice enough to invite me, but I don't think he does. But David has one of the best vent collections.
He does. He has. I was amazed. And one of the most, although everything else was phenomenal, when I saw Howdy Doody, it's like, oh, I had to drop. That was just amazing. I remembered when I was a child. But then looking around, then yes, the rest of what you see around here is memorabilia. That a galore, and a lot of costumes on mannequins, and boy, big on Ronald.
So the reason why we're big on Ronald, we actually have over six different Ronald McDonald costumes, actually including some of the earliest. Mm-hmm. The reason why is we would love to work on a future Ronald McDonald display in respect and in awe of what Ronald actually did. There used to be over 600 Ronalds in over 100 different countries. In the U.S., there's only about four Ronalds, and I'm sure each of us knew a Ronald McDonald magician. What they might not know is some guys like Buzz Fleischman did about 13,000 shows. Some other guys did 6,000 shows. And these school shows actually changed kids' lives. And here's something that many Ronalds don't talk about. In fact, Ronalds refer to each other as Toms. And here's something that one Tom, you might hear a speak to another Tom. It's about the most magical gift possible. When these Ronalds would visit the hospital, every one of them has a story about how they were able to get a child out of a coma. And
wow.
You can't make this stuff up.
No.
Each of these Ronalds have four, five coma stories, each
wow.
of them.
Wow.
And this is some things that I was talking to neurologists recently.
Wow.
With the ability of a Ronald saying to a kid, come on, little Scott, this is Ronald McDonald, I want to talk to you. Come on, talk to me. And it's amazing how that subliminal suggestion into the mind of a child in a coma snaps out of it. So we want to pay tribute one day to a whole Ronald McDonald display. And we also have a lot of the original magic props that are utilized inside a Ronald McDonald magic show. From Ronald McDonald sucker sliding die boxes to the instant art to Ronald McDonald drawer boxes to Ronald McDonald mirror boxes and Run Grimace Run. Who knew? Also on display, we have a whole rack of costumes. On the mannequins, we have Harry Blackstone Jr., Gay Blackstone's Bob Mackie gown. We have Doug Henning's costume. Then we have costumes from people like Peter Raveen, Norm Nielsen, Fantasio, even guys like Jay Marshall, my good friend Ray Goulet, Harry Lorraine. And the whole idea is for kids to know who these legends of magic were.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're all trying to do here at Phantasma is inspire the next legends of magic. And it's amazing how many of them never heard of guys like John Calvert, that we also have his beautiful gold jacket on. And then we have Marvin Roy, Mr. Electric's costume, and Marvin Roy's light bulb and sunglasses that he utilized in his show. And yes, we have a whole bunch of Mickey magician items and a whole bunch of antique wind-up toys. What do you think, Scott? Is this enough stuff for you?
Yeah, this would keep anybody occupied for weeks to go through and look at all this stuff, and not even just touching it, but just look. This is amazing. Wow, that's an original from The Simpsons, I guess?
Yeah, it's Penn & Teller. We have a lot of Penn & Teller ephemera. Uh-huh. Phantasma was lucky enough to help Penn & Teller produce their magic swirly ice cream on Celebrity Apprentice. And then here we have Kmar, the discount magician's
right.
props. Kmar was on David Letterman many, many times. And yes, we even have a Kmar costume and a lot of the tricks that are actually utilized. And it's actually signed by David Letterman out of respect to Kmar, which is pretty cool.
Hi, Kmar. Happy New Year. Yeah.
And one of my favorite bits that you can watch on YouTube, and if you haven't, you have to find Kmar on Letterman when Kmar, the discount magician, put a head cremation over David Letterman's head. He then proceeded to light it on fire. Well, Kmar, being Kmar, couldn't get the fire extinguished. And David's screaming, "Kmar, what the heck is going on? What's burning? What's that smell?" And Kmar is smacking David's head on top, trying to put out the flames. He couldn't put out the flames. Next thing you know, you hear Kmar going, trying to blow it out. Finally, Kmar gets it out. And David says to Kmar, "Kmar, you are never coming back on this show again. You're never coming back on this show." And then listeners listen to this. Kmar says, "Ladies and gentlemen, wasn't David just fabulous?" So the minute Kmar got the whole Letterman late night audience giving David a round of applause, David calmed down. He gave Kmar a big handshake, and then Kmar then was able to continue to appear on the Letterman show.
What a story. Wow, this is fabulous. And then it goes on back for all of your warehouse, obviously.
It's our design department where we create the magic sets and magic toys, our operations department, and the walls are all decorated with ephemera from the Thurston days to the Keller days and so on.
You know, I really have to thank you for over the years and generations of what that you have done to inspire young people to continue in magic. Particularly, I know with the IBM, and I know what you've done with the organization in allowing or giving the junior winners a free trip to New York City and to come here, and to and what that you have done financially to help people, plus encouraging them just by having this display and letting people understand and know about the past and know about history, and having a free museum like that to encourage people to come and take a look at. And you have done a lot. I mean, there'll be people who'll be looking back and saying, "Well, I remember when I was in New York and going to Fantasma, or Roger Dreyer had shown me this or that, or I had an opportunity to New York, or I always wanted to go, and I told my mom and dad, this is the first place I want to go." So thank you for all that you've been doing in magic over the years.
Well, Scott, it's I think every one of your listeners would agree that they all had some mentor that when they were younger, who got them into magic. My challenge to your listeners is, who are you mentoring? Who are you encouraging? Who are you sharing what you learned with magic? It's sad to see a lot of the kids that come to Fantasma and just buy decks of cards for cardistry, and that's a great way for a magic shop to stay in business, because the kids is buying decks of cards. But it would be nice if other magicians introduce kids to such a thing called a silk or a candle or some type of magical prop,
or
let alone a book. But we're very proud that since 2004, we've been flying a child and their guardian either to New York and Las Vegas, all expense paid. And it would be really awesome that if local magic clubs could go ahead and mentor one child and raise funds and have that child sent off to the national convention. That would put magic in a much better place and allow us to continue magic as the art form that all of us want. So instead of us complaining about how kids are doing wrong and how kids are this and doing that, maybe if more of us shared, like what you're doing, Scott, with your podcast to people, that might change the image and outlook of our art to everyone.
You know, not every child going into school is going to excel at sports or at scholastics or something. And there's always something that you're trying to find that will separate you from others. Everyone wants to be unique in their own person. And magic is certainly something you can get into as a boy or a girl to grow into a woman or a man and a performer. And I am seeing a lot more women getting into magic and young girls getting inspired by the women who are successful in the field of magic than right now. Do you see a lot of that then as well coming in here?
In fact, we actually have several female employees behind the magic counter. Mm-hmm. I would say today, as a rough number, I would say about 30% of the consumers buying magic are now women, which is very, very surprising. That's a large jump from years ago.
In like the past 5 years or 10 years? Or how?
I would say in the last 5 years. I think a lot of it had to do with Hermione from Harry Potter.
Good point.
That might have inspired a lot of the witches out there, to say the least.
Yeah. Speaking of witches in Harry Potter, obviously that must have had a little bit of a bump. You know, the people were coming in just kind of interested to find out, well, where can I get a wand?
It's yes and no, strangely enough. It definitely helped the awareness of magic, and I think a lot of the elder parents that read the books wanted then to bring their kids and introduce the kids to magic. Mm-hmm. So I think it helped a lot of parents pushing their kids into magic and getting off their phones and having to force to interact, which the hobby of magic allows you to do, but also encouraged a lot of girls to think about magic as well.
Right. You know, the there's a podcast out there with my friends Kayla Drescher and Carissa Hendricks have a call, Shazam, and the whole idea of their podcast is try to empower and encourage and let other young girls and women know that this is going to be an acceptable thing, so eventually that they would like to essentially be defunct, you know, saying that we're all equal and that it doesn't matter, man or woman. And you're seeing that, I think, on Vegas. You know, Jen Kramer and has got a great show in Las Vegas, you know.
When Jen Kramer was 16, she rocked Fantasma. She worked for us for a summer as an intern. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, sorry, guys, at the time, that 16-year-old girl was a better magic shop manager than the magic shop manager. So Jen was ahead of her time.
I heard she's a great cardician.
Yes, absolutely. And then other than Jen Kramer in New York, we have Belinda Sinclair that actually has a female show. It's a show that's always sold out that not many people know about in New York. But Belinda Sinclair is another great show to see while you're in New York. Then, of course, you have shows like Dan White, Steve Cohn, Joshua Jay, Todd Robbins, and Monday Night Magic. So we have more and more magic shows in New York happening. So, Scott, all I can say is thanks for our time. No, Scott, take off the Ronald McDonald costume, please. You're not...
But I look good in this with my red
Scott,
nose.
Scott, take off the red... all right, listeners, you can imagine what Scott's doing because we're just going to leave it. Just eat the hamburger, Scott.
One last thing, and then I'll let you go then, Roger, that we've been friends for a long number of years, and I've admired everything that you've been doing as well, you know, being a dealer and going to the magic shops and everything. As I close, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is important to you? You've talked about youth and everything. What is your magic word or phrase? What's your philosophy?
My magical word or phrase. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is not my phrase, but it's, ah, yes, my boy, the Fulidor of the Isle of Malagula. So that's a copy phrase of my mentor, Alf Lasso, which means, once again, that everyone should become a mentor to someone.
That's great. Be a mentor. And the best place, obviously, as you'd mentioned about the magic clubs, for them to start mentoring to youth who come in. And so great advice. Thank you.
And just don't tell them, stand up straight, my boy. That might scare the kids away. Thanks, Scott.
So for the Magic Word Podcast in New York City here at Fantasma and the Houdini Museum, that was Roger Dreyer. Scotty out. Thank you again, Roger, very much for being my guest on this very special episode here that happens to fall on Halloween, the 93rd anniversary of Harry Houdini's passing. And it was phenomenal to go through your collection, and I appreciate the time you took. And I obviously see you have an interest with a lot of things having to do with Houdini, and obviously you must have some more things at home in your personal collection that were not available for us to see on public display. But for those people who are going to be going to New York, perhaps you might want to see that as well. So I would recommend that you do go by Fantasma, which is at 213 West 35th Street, Suite 401 in New York City. And if you're planning on going there and you reside in the United States and you're going to be going to New York sometime, I'd be glad to send you one of these four passes that he had sent me. It's pretty cool. It allows you not only to look through the museum, access to the museum, but also you can redeem it for a free magic trick. And they're open 7 days a week. So if you're going to be going to New York City, there's no reason why you shouldn't go there. So since I have four of these, I'd be glad just to put them in the mail to you if you reside here in the U.S. so I don't have to pay more than just a stamp put in an envelope to get it there. But again, just drop me an email, scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'll be glad to get one of those to you. And I'd probably say hurry up, because after these are gone, that's all I have, are just those four that Roger was nice enough to give me. And I do want to also remind everybody that as for freebies, that
I remember last week that in episode number 527 with the three different authors, they were offering three copies of each of their two books. So one of them has to do with Houdini, which is The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini, and the other one is on The Show Won't Go On. And those are going to be available for free, that I'm going to be giving out three copies of each of those, thanks to the authors and their publishers. So be sure to go back to that episode number 527 on themagicwordpodcast.com. And there at the bottom of that blog, you will see forms that you can fill out. And I'll be drawing those names then next week. That's the Wednesday before we release the next episode. So that's going to be then on November the 6th. I'm going to start to draw those then next week. So be sure that your name is in the hopper and you get an opportunity to win one of those books. And I, again, want to thank the authors and the publishers for donating those wonderful books. And they're both tremendous. And one more thing that I would like to ask you listeners, if you would be interested in being on the Magic Word Podcast with your story, I've got something that I would like to explore. I got an email from one of the recent friends of the Magic Word, Mr. Ted Shulman, and he had said that since listening to your podcast, I have really upped my game, performing Hundy 500, Double Cross, various card tricks, et cetera, for people I meet or people in my life. Also, I started going to the conventions. I really tapped into my childhood enthusiasm for magic when I used to visit Al Flosso shop and perform as a teenager for children's parties. Post-college, I made another brief attempt to engage in magic, taking lessons from Mike Bornstein, a New York City magician, and even one lesson from Eric DeCamps that I saw at Mostly Magic. I also like the podcast where you ask people to phone in their experiences, for an example, having their props stolen. And that goes back to that episode where that was called Gone in 60 Seconds, and everybody talked about what was stolen and what the outcome was of that and what recommendations that they would have, how they keep the things from being stolen in the future. He goes on to say that with newspapers, sometimes you see them ask a question because they're trying to develop a human interest story, such as if you got sick on your vacation or you're married, your grade school sweetheart, etc. Then we want to hear from you. And then they write a story after they make contact with the respondents. Well, I think you could do a little more of that type of thing. One suggestion that's germane to me would be if you picked up magic late in life or began to take it seriously late in life. I want to hear your story. I would love to be inspired by others who did not become performers early in life. And that was from Ted Shulman. So again, thanks, Ted. Good suggestion. And I would like to pursue this. So if you have a story, please just drop me an email, scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. You don't have to go into detail about your story, but just that you have something that might be of interest that you'd like to talk about. I want to make this brief, just as I did with the Gone in 60 Seconds episode. I believe I had about 13 or 14 different people that I spoke to within an hour. So we just had about 10 minutes that was allocated to each person. So specifically that if you do have a story in which that you came into magic late in life, perhaps you may have been inspired when you were a child, but it wasn't until later in life that you really got the bug, I guess. The bug had bitten you and that you continued to pursue it. Whether or not that you continued to pursue it doing professional shows or you did some charity shows, worked at hospitals, did other kinds of things, but at least it bit you hard enough that you would like to share that experience. So what I'd like to know is, what was it specifically, I guess, that might have been that trigger that caused you to get interested in magic again later in life if you started out as a child or if this is the first time that you're getting involved into magic later in life? And then also, what do you plan to do with it or how do you expect this magic to actually continue to change your life going on to the future? So just a couple of quick questions to answer that I would like to discuss with you, and we can kind of put these together in an upcoming episode if I gather enough stories. So again, if you're interested in contacting me and chatting online, and it doesn't matter where you live in the world, I am going to use Skype to contact you. And so it'd be easy enough just to make a little phone call to find out how that you got started in magic and really what do you want to, where do you want to go with it? And where is it taking you? What do you plan to do with it? And most people, it seems like, got into magic when they were very young and continued that interest to some degree, either seriously or partially seriously. But there are some people who, again, later in life really got serious, and those are the ones I'd like to talk with. All right, well, you get the idea. And if you're interested, that's Scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. Drop me a line.
So this kind of wraps up our Halloween episode over here, featuring Houdini and other kinds of things that are Halloween-ish. And I want to thank you guys very much for letting us have a lot of fun here during this month of Boo in October. And I've certainly enjoyed having some fun putting this thing all together each week, having something a little bit different in the introduction, and also some very special guests that would relate to this particular month. We're going to be having some more upcoming guests that I've already gotten in the can and ready to go that'll be exciting. And in fact, if you subscribe to our pod letter, then you're going to know who's going to be coming from week to week, because not only do I publish in there who we have currently, but also who you can expect to hear from in the following week, plus recommendation from the archives of somebody that you may have missed or you should go back and hear at least a second time. So if you haven't subscribed to the pod letter, whenever that you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you should be able to find a way to subscribe. Please do, and to also like us on Facebook for The Magic Word, and follow Scott Wells Magic on Twitter and Instagram. Enough of that. There we go. The social media information has been given. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to be a mentor to someone. This is Scotty out.